War gardens, victory gardens, pandemic gardens. You might have heard any of these names to define a garden that is grown in hard times. In 2020, as we were pushed inside and gardening surged in popularity, I started hearing the term victory garden for the first time, used in reference to the world's increased interest in gardening, and soon realized that there is a deep history around Americans and the desire to become more self-sufficient for themselves and others. Today, guest Maggie Stuckey's recent book, The Container Victory Garden, which is part history book, part gardening tutorial, is highlighted as Maggie joins us to review the history of victory gardens, the interesting and surprising role that they've played in society throughout the last 100 years. And on a deeper level, Maggie and I explore the reasons why people are so drawn to plants in tough times. Welcome.
Welcome to the Growing Joy podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives. I'm Maria, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, an epic plant killer turned happy plant lady. On Growing Joy, you'll find conversations about plant care, plant community, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy, the podcast.
Hello, my plant friends. Welcome back if you're a longtime listener, and welcome. Welcome home if you're a new listener. I'm so happy you're here. I'm the host of Growing Joy, and it is my delight to help you be happier through plants. That's what we do here on Growing Joy. We learn how to live happier lives through caring for plants, whether you're a houseplant parent or a gardener, or maybe you're both. I'm excited to continue this series of episodes where we're exploring the history in regards to the plants that we love. I loved the recent episode we did with Jane Perrone on the history of houseplants. Today, we're learning about the history of victory gardens. And next month, we're going to learn about the history of flowers with Noel Kingsbury. It's been fun learning the history and context of the hobby that we enjoy, whether it's cultivating an indoor jungle or an outdoor garden oasis. Let me know if you like these history-style episodes. I will find more guests to interview if it is lighting you up as much as it's lighting me up. Fun personal note, I'm recording this episode right before I hop on a plane to go to Florida to not only visit Mama Fiella, but more important, to be maid of honor in my little sister Allie's wedding. She's getting married. The speech is written, the dress is purchased, and I'm so freaking excited. And all of my plants for my garden have been ordered. So because we're going to Florida for 2 weeks in May, I couldn't start seeds this season. I usually start seeds, but we're gone for too long and I didn't want to deal with finding a babysitter for seedlings. So I just ordered transplants from Territorial Seed Company. I'm really excited and they're timed perfectly to arrive right after our frost date, which is when we get back from Florida. Plant friends, I'm so excited to get growing. I am so excited to fill my balcony filled with cut flowers again, the way I did last year. Billy and I would sit on our balcony surrounded by our flowers and our tomatoes and have dinner every night. It was so amazing. I'm so excited for warmer weather. If you followed me on Instagram, I'm itchy. I'm an itchy gardener right now. Anyway, my conversation today with Maggie that we're airing is so special. Maggie is such a joy. I'm going to let her introduce herself. This conversation is so sweet. I just wanted to say there's a bit of audio interference. There's a bit of an audio quality issue, but this conversation was so wonderful. I really wanted to share it with you. So just prefacing that there might be moments when the audio is a little bit tricky, but I needed to air this because I really wanted you to understand the history of these gardens and to meet Maggie, who's such a sweetheart. You also might hear Frankie, my bird in the background, but he's just becoming a fixture in the audio landscape of Growing Joy. All right, here's Maggie. Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm so touched by your book, and I'm so excited to chat about this concept, this title, Victory Gardens, that I've heard so much about in the last 3 years, don't know much about. I spent this morning reading through your book, reading the amazing stories you've collated, and I mean, I say this a lot, plants are emotional, right? Plants are so much more than garden decor, and I think your book is a huge testament to that.
I have this paragraph in the introduction that starts with this sentence. Plants are, gardening is hope made real. Because I was working on this book in the early days of COVID when we were all so afraid. We didn't know what was happening. We were hoping we didn't get sick. We were hoping people we loved didn't get sick. We were hoping the scientists would hurry up and figure this out and get the vaccines and hoping there'd be enough vaccines to go around. So we're hoping for these intangible things that in this terrible time that we didn't really understand what was happening. But when you put a seed in the ground, you don't have to hope that you're going to get a plant, because that will happen. The act of putting this a little tiny seed in the ground is going to give you a tangible, very real result. It's going to happen no matter what you do. Now, when it starts to grow, it's up to you to make sure it's growing well. But the plant itself is there to give you what it has. And if we're smart, we embrace not only the physicality of it, but the fact that we did this. All of us put this little seed in the ground, and suddenly here we have food. So from this one simple act, we are providing nourishment for our bodies, which is life itself, really. From this one simple act, something tangible and good comes to pass.
Okay, Maggie, I can tell we're going to be friends immediately, because I love that you just went so deep so quickly. That is totally my style. It reminds me of I've told this story on my podcast before, but there was the first time I did seed starting. I was living in 500 square feet in New York City, starting tomato plants. And I was so stressed about it. And I called my mom, who's a gardener. She comes from a lineage of Italian gardeners. And I'm like, I don't know. I made the seed starting setup. I've got the grow lights. I don't know if I did it right. I don't know. And she was like, Maria, it's a seed. Put it in the dirt and it's going to grow. Like, it's so simple. I've never heard seeds framed that way before. They have everything to give us, but we have to put ourselves in that receptive space to allow the seeds to kind of come forth before our eyes and give us their gifts. I think that's so beautiful. You are an epic gardener, historian, author of multiple books, Maggie. How did you become the plant lady that you are today?
I was born in South Carolina, and both of my parents grew up in a very small town in the rural part of the state where everybody was a farmer and everybody had a vegetable garden. That's just what you did in those days. In the summertime, I spent a lot of time in my grandmother's house in the family home with this huge cotton farm and a huge vegetable garden, and I would sort of toddle along behind her in the garden. You know how children learn. They just absorb whatever's around them. And so without giving it a lot of existential thought, I absorbed the idea that garden is all about growing food, fresh, healthy food to feed your family and maybe a little extra to share with people who need it. So as an adult, when I finished college, I actually lived in two very big cities in apartments. So for years, I had no opportunity to have a garden. But I still had this real deep sort of sense that that's what gardening is all about. Garden equals food. So when I moved to Oregon in the 1970s, it's the first time as an adult that I lived in an actual house with an actual yard. So I thought, okay, guys, I know exactly what to do now. And I turned the whole backyard into a vegetable garden. And it was Oregon. I don't know if you know this. Oregon is one of the main agricultural states in the country. And because we have incredible conditions that support all kinds of agricultural crops. So it really wasn't hard. It's like we were talking before, you put the seeds in the ground and dang, everything just happens. Then about 15 years after that, I moved into a beautiful apartment in a lovely old, gracious old apartment building, but it's an apartment. So no big garden space. All I had is a patio about the size of a bandana. And I knew if I wanted to keep growing vegetables, which is where my heart is, it would have to be in containers, which I could put on the patio and watch them do their thing. Didn't know the first thing about container gardening, so I went to the library to check out a book on container gardening, and they were all about growing flowers. Well, I don't have anything against flowers, but I wanted to grow vegetables. So I figured I make my living as a writer, and I'm always kind of looking around the corner for the next book ideas, and I thought, I can't possibly be the only person in the world who would like to do this. So maybe that should be my next book. And I spent a couple of years experimenting, trying to figure out what worked and what didn't work. And most importantly, what's not worth the trouble in a container garden. And that produced a book about 21 years ago that became kind of the standard, because at that point there wasn't very much information about it. When I was researching it, people would they thought I was crazy. They'd say, "Are you kidding me? You can't grow vegetables in containers." Well, actually, you can. If you start out with the right varieties, you can do it with very successfully. It's easier than people think. So that book was Bible for a long, long time. But you yourself know, after a while, books just kind of lose their total momentum, and the publishers make a decision that, this has run through its lifespan. So I moved on to other things. And then 2020 came, and we saw this incredible frenzy of interest in vegetable garden from people who had never done it, never even thought about it, all because we were all, those were the early days of the pandemic, and people were afraid to go outside the house, even afraid to go to the grocery store. So everybody, it seemed like the whole world had this idea at the same time, which is, I'll just grow a few vegetables myself, except they didn't know how to do it. So that's when I started thinking, I actually do have some information that would be helpful here. So maybe it's time for a new version of the whole container gardening thing. And then I was looking at watching what was happening. I mean, you would go into a garden center, there were no plants. There were hardly any seeds. You would go to the website of your favorite seed catalog company. They didn't have any seeds to sell. You call them on the phone and you couldn't get through. They had to shut down the customer service lines because everybody in the world was trying to buy seeds. So the people that supplied them just completely ran out. It never happened that anybody's memory that this one incredible surge all at the same time of interest in vegetable gardening. So I thought, I can actually help here. So I started working on the new book. And I was, at some point in there, I thought, because I'm a history buff, history nerd, I guess is a better term. I suddenly thought, this is a lot like what happened in World War II with the Victory Gardens, when people just planted a few vegetables wherever they could find a little scrap of space. I wonder if we should be thinking about this as a modern-day version of the Victory Gardens. And it turns out it was very much like that. A lot of the same psychology and the same emotional connection that people had in World War I and World War II. We saw again a couple of years ago the whole sense that growing a few vegetables to help your family is a good thing for your family, and it's also a good thing for humanity, for the whole world right now.
Talking about Victory Gardens and container gardens, we have to talk about Espoma Organic, a beloved sponsor of the podcast. If you're planting up your garden this year, or you're just tending to an amazing collection of houseplants, you got to look to Espoma Organic for all of your potting mix and fertilizer needs, plant friends. If you don't already know, Espoma is a 90-year-old family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. As you're planting up your garden, you've got to use their potting mix and their garden soil suited for whatever your setup is, whether it's container gardening like today. If you are container gardening, you would use their potting mix. If you're gardening in raised beds, you would use their raised bed mix. They also have in-ground garden soil and all the fertilizer that you need to get your plants set up and growing and thriving throughout the gardening season. You use their BioTone Starter Plus to start, and then throughout the gardening season, you can supplement with their line of Tones, which is their line of plant foods. They have Garden Tone for general garden plants. They have Flower Tone for your flowers. They've got Bulb Tone for your bulbs. And most importantly, they have Tomato Tone for your tomatoes. You got to be feeding those tomatoes with their Tomato Tone throughout the year. And if you're a houseplant parent, they also have your back. You use their potting mix for your houseplants. They also have cacti and succulent mix. They've got African violet mix. They've got orchid mix. They've got bonsai mix. And then I love their indoor houseplant liquid fertilizer. You simply pour it into your watering can. It makes fertilizing your houseplants so easy. I love working with Espoma. It's a company run by lovely people. It's a family-run company, and they have a huge sustainability commitment, 100% solar-powered plant, zero-waste manufacturing, and eco-friendly packaging. To learn more about their indoor and outdoor products, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes to go to my Amazon storefront where I have a curated list of my Espoma favorites. Imagine that beautiful harmony wafting its way through your lawn and garden this year. Or better yet, gifting the glorious experience of a Wind River chime to a loved one. So every time they hear it sing, they think of you. Hands down, one of the best things Billy and I ever did for our mindfulness practices in 2023 is hang Wind River chimes on either side of our house. They sing in the wind throughout the day, and every time they do, their melodies are an invitation to stop what we're doing, take a deep breath, and drop back into the present. Not to mention, they just make me smile because they sound so dang pretty. We joke that our house feels like a spa. Today, Wind River wants to use their ad time to gift you a mindful moment with their chimes, so please enjoy. Let's take a big breath in, hold it, exhale. Another big breath, hold it, and exhale again. The chimes are so magical, and not only do they sound magical, but the company is magical. The Wind River Chimes is rooted in service. For chimes purchased on windriverchimes.com, they donate 20% of the purchase price to charity each month. 20% to charity. So friends, get yourself or your loved one a chime for your next birthday, your next wedding to celebrate, a memorial, and when you use the code GROWINGJOY at windriverchimes.com, you'll get a free engraving on any engravable wind chime to add a special element to your gift. They come in a variety of colors, sizes, and sounds, so head to windriverchimes.com to listen, and don't forget to use code GROWINGJOY at checkout to receive a free engraving. windriverchimes.com, code GROWINGJOY at checkout. I'm curious, before we dive into the concept of Victory Gardens, what does your garden look like right now? What are you growing?
We, here in Oregon, we have experienced, like a lot of places in the country, some very weird weather patterns. So here we are in early May. Normally, I would have all kinds of stuff growing, but we had some serious setbacks with freak snowstorms that killed a lot of stuff in March. So now I'm kind of starting over. So what I have right now is pansies and violas, because I grow, those are edible. I only grow things you can eat. So those are edible flowers, and they do well in cool weather, which we still have in Oregon right now. And I have some lettuces, again, a cool weather crop, and some garlic chives, which I planted a long time ago, and they come back year after year. I have to do anything. They just pop up and say, "Hi, I'm here again." I have plans for a lot more than that, but if the weather will give me a break, give me a break here, please. Whoever's in control of the weather.
Oh, man. I can relate. I live in 2 hours north of New York in the Catskills, in not only it's cold up here. I mean, it hailed 2 weeks ago, but my particular town and my area in my town is a microclimate where I'm advised not to plant anything until Memorial Day, after Memorial Day. So my gardening season is very small and it's driving me nuts. We're doing this interview in early May and I'm just like itching to get out in the garden, but, you know, practicing restraint where I can. So let's dive into this book that you wrote, and the concept of Victory Gardens. You know, personally, as a millennial, newer to gardening, I had my podcast during the pandemic, but I was more of a houseplant parent. I started hearing the term Victory Garden a lot. There were articles in newspapers about it. There was a talk about the resurgence. All of a sudden, all my friends were texting me saying, "Hey, how do I grow tomatoes? Hey, how can I grow food?" when they had never shown interest in my passion for plants before. Can you walk us through the history, the rich history of Victory Gardens, even before they were what we know them now to be Victory Gardens?
It started actually in World War One. A man named Charles Pack, who was the CEO of a big timber company, he was the third generation. This is a family business, and he was the third generation to run the company. I think they were based in Minnesota, if my memory's right on that. And it was a major, major business. In fact, such a success that Mr. Pack was at one point the fifth richest man in America. He was also, I deduce from following what he did, I deduce that he was a man of real compassion. And during World War One, he was very aware that people in Europe, which at that point was still a farming economy, when young men left home to go to war, they were the people who were running the family farm. And when people from the different philosophies met each other on the battlefield, those battles were taking place on land that used to be the family farm, all of which meant that the food production in Europe was in serious crisis. And Mr. Pack was aware that food insecurity, to use the modern phrase, was already happening. And in fact, famine was not out of the question in the immediate future. So because he was so successful, he had a lot of contacts in industry, in the scientific community, and he decided that Americans could help if they could become aware of what was happening in Europe, and if he and some of his pals could make specific suggestions of what Americans might do to help our allies in Europe. And he formed what he called the War Garden Commission. And it had scientists. Luther Burbank was one. He recruited people who were presidents of major universities, presidents of huge business organizations to serve on this commission. And together they had so much influence in Washington that it wasn't long before the federal government jumped on this idea. And it essentially took the form of what we would now call a gigantic PR campaign, with a lot of posters, a lot of magazine articles, a lot of newspaper articles, a lot of radio interviews with artists and actors and musicians of the day, encouraging Americans to grow a small garden for themselves so that the major commercial producers of food crops could take some of what they produce and send it to Europe to help recover some of the lost food possibilities in Europe. But at this point, the United States wasn't engaged in World War One yet. But his whole idea was just getting off the ground when the United States did join the war. And suddenly, people no longer had to understand this abstract idea that if they had carrots in their garden, then carrots from the big food producers could go to Europe. They now knew that whatever they did might help their own sons and husbands or family members or people they cared about, because those guys were now on their way to Europe to fight the war as well. So the whole idea of growing food in a home garden, a small home garden, if it had to be, was all about supporting the war effort. That became the phrase, help the war effort.
And they used to be called war gardens, right?
They were called war gardens, yes, yes. At the end of World War One, Mr. Pack knew that they weren't magically going to suddenly have food crops in Europe. So he wanted the whole concept to keep going. And he wrote this article, a newspaper article, I think, in which he referred to Victory Gardens. But what he meant was, now we have victory at the end of World War One, but let's not forget about the gardens. Victory Gardens meaning gardens in the time of victory. Little did he know, of course, that 20 years later, we'd be in another gigantic world war. But that phrase kind of stuck with people. So informally, they became being called Victory Gardens from that moment on. And in World War II, of course, it was a much, much, much bigger movement supported by the federal government. And one of the things, one of the new ideas that came forth at that point is to encourage local government administrations to find some spot within the area that they were responsible for where they could peel off a space and make it available as a community garden to people who didn't have access to a garden space, be it a city park or a part of a parking lot in the small airport terminal or something. Anywhere there was some property owned by a government entity that they could take a portion of it and make it available to their members of their community to use as a community garden. Now, here's the cool thing. Right now, today, in 2023, in three of our biggest cities, there are community gardens being used right now that started in World War II as community gardens, and they've been community gardens ever since. And they're in the middle of these. It's Boston, Washington, D.C., and Minneapolis. And they're in the middle of the commercial areas of those cities where you would think that people over the years would say, well, we need a parking lot. We need a new apartment building. We need a new whatever. Let's get rid of this community garden. And the community would not stand for it. They have been community gardens from 1940s to right now every year. And people love it. It just touches my heart to think that there was so much passion for community gardens that they just formed circles around them and said, keep your bulldozers out of here. We need this garden. And they...
I need my tomatoes.
Yeah. And they prevailed all these years.
I love it. So the concept of community gardens, did that concept of having a community garden start in World War II, or were there community gardens before World War II and World War II accelerated the impact of community gardens?
I think probably the latter, but I don't know for sure. And I'm not even sure they were called community gardens officially until much later. In World War II, they were just garden spaces for neighbors, you know. We of the advertising age kind of are accustomed to giving labels to things. So we call them community gardens now, but they may not have had that actual terminology during the wars. I'm just not sure about that.
That's super interesting. Yeah, I mean, just thinking about, you know, living in New York City for over a decade and how important those community gardens are and how people fight for the raffle to get your garden plot and whether or not you get a plot for the year. In the pandemic, personally, I had a 7-foot long Juliet balcony that I gardened on in the pandemic in my tiny apartment. But down the street from me in Long Island City, there was a school community garden. And in the pandemic, I would walk there every day and sit in the community garden just to have a respite, like just to deal with my emotions and the trauma of living in New York City in the pandemic. It was so important to have that green space and to see, you know, a little tomato seedling turn into a fully thriving tomato plant, like when everything felt like it was standing still. So you mentioned one of the main reasons why this concept of war gardens or victory gardens became important. People wanted to take pressure off of the government to support them with food. And if I can grow my own food, that food that larger companies grow can go elsewhere. What are other reasons why you think people grow gardens or feel moved to start a garden in tough times, whether it's war, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's just a personal turmoil?
Well, there's something affirming about the simplicity of the idea. You know, we talked about seeds before. A seed is just a little thing. They're usually not very big. But it has already within itself everything the plant needs. The raw material for the roots, for the stems, for the leaves, for the flowers, for the vegetables, if that's what they are, is already contained within this little tiny pebble of a thing, you know. So the magic of watching that development is a diversion. It's an affirmation. It's a little miracle. I mean, it really is. And we, the humans who own this miracle, can help it along, can encourage it, can create the conditions under which it is able to reach its full potential. And then we sort of feel like we had a hand in that. We can make this little square foot of soil a little better. We can make my dinner plans a little better. We can make my family's health a little better. I'm particularly thinking about this conversation that I had with a man named John Fish, who is right now works for his university. He makes his living helping people do gardens with the county. He's in charge of the extension agents for his university program statewide. But he told me a story about his mom. His father and his uncle were both fighting soldiers in World War II. And he wanted, John, as an adult, was real interested to learn what that experience was about. And he asked his dad, and his dad said, "I really don't want to talk about that, son." So he asked his mom, what was it like in those days from her perspective? And she, of all the things she could have chosen to talk about, she talked about the family garden during those days. And one of the things she said was, watching the plants grow gave me hope that your dad and my brother were going to come home safely. I did what I could for the garden, and the garden, what the garden did for me was be a symbol of encouragement and hope. There's actually 20 stories in the book of people alive now who remember helping out in their family's victory gardens during the war. And I had so much fun, so wonderful interviewing them. I heard the word patriotism a lot. I heard the word sacrifice a lot. And I heard this whole idea about the hopefulness of planting a garden. They use slightly different words, but that whole notion I just heard over and over and over again. I mean, it practically makes me cry thinking about it. Every single day they'd hear these horrible war reports from the radio, and Mrs. Fetch would just go out into the garden and watch the plants grow and leave with a little more hopeful, a little more hope in her heart.
You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. You know, there's a reason why everyone says gardening is their therapy. There's a reason why that's on a million t-shirts all over the place, because I think you hit the nail on the head earlier in the conversation where it boils everything down to such simplicity. These plants don't have brains that make them overthink everything. And these plants don't have anxiety. These plants don't have depression. Like, these plants just have, like you said, everything that they need to sprout and grow. And in watching the simplicity of them doing what they're destined to do, there is a calmness, I mean, a hope as well, but there's also just, it just kind of brings you back to yourself. It brings you back to the basics, I think, that is so important, especially, I mean, back then, yeah, World War II, but now too, when you turn on the TV and there's atrocities and school shootings every other day and all of these horrible things.
Right. And all of these horrible things, as devastating as they are to think about, each of us as an individual knows there's precious little we can do. What's happened in the last couple of weeks just about destroys me when I think about it. And I know, aside from putting pressure on my elected officials who already think the way I think, there's not a whole lot I can do to improve that situation. So I can either curl up in a ball and fret about what's happening in our country, or I can go outside and say hi to my pansies, you know, and pick a few for add to the salad tonight. Or I can pull a few weeds and think, okay, this is something tangible I can do. Get these guys out of here, open up a space for some new plants. And then I'll come back in a couple of weeks and I can sit and talk to them and thank them.
I love that. I think also that concept of sharing with your community in a world where there's so much unkindness, I think being a beacon of kindness and sharing what you grow and giving a friend a bouquet of flowers or some herbs from your garden, like that in itself can be an act of kindness. But, you know, that in itself can help have a ripple effect, putting the world in a way that we want it to go, you know?
Yeah, that is so true. And it is so easy. I like to encourage people, even if they can't do anything else, plant a small container of herbs. One container of herbs can do magic. And I keep a set of scissors and a ball of ribbon by my back door. And as soon as the herb plants, you know, have enough foliage that I can actually start harvesting some, I love to make little tiny bundles of herbs and wrap them in this pink ribbon and tie it on somebody's doorknob.
I love that.
Eventually, they figure out it's from me because they know me, but it costs nothing. And it gives, not only you spread sunshine and then you reflect the sunshine back to yourself, because it's simple and it's easy, but it's meaningful and it's real. There's something real about having a sprig of rosemary. It's a real thing. It's not just good wishes. It's something you can add to your dinner tonight.
And also in this age of social media, it's real that you walked over to your friend's doorstep and tied some herbs. Like, it's a real human action that a human receives instead of all the social media is fantastic, but it doesn't replace that person-to-person experience. So let's talk about, you mentioned you have 20 of these adorable, sweet, heartwarming stories throughout your book of people who have memories of the war and the original war and victory gardens. Something that I really appreciated in reading your book is that not all the stories are positive. Multiple of the stories are, we killed our victory garden, or tornado tore through our victory garden. We tried a weird fertilization method that didn't work. And I think, you know, that is a big issue with these pandemic gardeners, with victory gardeners, with war gardeners, is that maybe you try and you try with this emotional, patriotic moment, and then you fail. What are the biggest reasons that you see new gardeners who are trying in this effort to, you know, set themselves up for success and grow some food for themselves? What are the biggest mistakes you see people do?
I'll give you kind of a roundabout answer. The absolute thing that you always have to remember is that when you're gardening in containers, you have very limited space to work with. That's a given. And so some of the plants and or seeds that you will find in garden centers, in mail order catalogs, are intended for big garden spaces. The plants themselves grow big. They take up a lot of space. They need a lot of space to reach the maturity level where they actually start producing the food stuff that they were growing them for. The wonderful news for container gardeners is that in the past 10 years, and particularly the past 5 years, the entire horticultural industry has awakened to the idea that a lot of people want to grow in containers, and they've developed new varieties that specifically work in containers because they stay small and compact and have a tight growth. The term is growth habit, means the ultimate shape of the plant as it reaches maturity. But new gardeners don't really appreciate the difference between the compact growth habit and the sort of standard growth habit that somebody with 40 acres might put in their garden. And the information that's available to them when they walk through the aisles of a garden center with thousands of plants there, the information is not clear. So the most common mistake is they start off with the wrong varieties. And let's, for example, zucchini is kind of the classic.
The world's largest leaves.
Yeah, it leaves and it grows all over the place. It'll grow over the edge of the container and along, drop over the edges of the balcony. And then the zucchinis that you want to eat are two floors down below you, you know. Or they're running around on the patio and somebody will come along and step on them, or the squirrels will have a heyday. There is a zucchini that works in containers, and if that's what you want to, if you want to grow zucchini, you need to be sure you get that one, not the one meant for the big gardens. And this, that concept applies across the board.
Yeah, I want to shout out a long-term partner and sponsor of the podcast, Territorial Seed Company. They're actually near you.
Oh, yeah, they are. It's a fabulous company. They're great.
Yeah, they sponsor my podcast. I'm obsessed with them. And they have done such a good job cultivating miniature container-sized plants. They have a whole line called the kitchen counter line, and it's lower light tolerant. You can grow most of them in 6-inch pots. I have a hydroponic planter that has, you know, little hydroponic plugs. I'm growing 3 different types of tomatoes right now that are 6 inches tall and have 20 tomatoes, dime-sized tomatoes. And I'm the most vigorous mini cucumber plant. I've got 20 cucumbers growing out of a little hydroponic plug. It's unbelievable. But I just want to second what you're saying. The horticulture industry has really created unbelievable varieties for container gardeners, but you have to just do a little bit of heavy lifting up front, making sure that you get the right varieties. Because when I go, I'm a container gardener. I'm a grow bag gardener. I have 25 grow bags on a balcony in my house in the Catskills now. And when I go to my local garden center, it's all indeterminate, enormous tomatoes. It's all zucchinis. There's no information about that. Like, you have to do your research ahead of time and either go with your knowledge to the garden center or order through a company like Territorial Seed. I just ordered all my plants through them this year.
I love recommending to people that they get the catalogs from company like Territorial, because you're absolutely right. Very, very often they have created a special collection of the best of the best.
Yeah, they do the hard work for you.
They did all the hard work for you. The fact of the matter is today there's hardly any vegetable you can think of for which there is not a container perfect cultivar. When I started, you had to read seed catalogs like a detective, look for key words like vigorous growth. Well, you don't want that. Now they make it easy.
Yeah, you can. I mean, I think about, and I didn't know this when I still lived in New York City with my 7-square-foot balcony garden, which I grew food on. I grew herbs and tomatoes on. I wish I knew about these smaller plants, because I really think you could grow a full garden. I think I could have done a full garden in my 7 square feet if I had these varietals, 6 years ago.
Yeah. Well, my dear, it's not your fault. They hadn't been developed yet.
They weren't there yet. Yeah. And it's okay. I can grow them now. And I have bigger grow bags now. I also just want to, vulnerably speak from personal experience. Oh boy, I've done that before so bad. Last year in a grow bag, I tried growing a Three Sisters garden in a grow bag because I was obsessed with braiding sweetgrass. And I just wanted to experience seeing those three plants grow together. And I grew 4 stalks of corn and I had 1 corn cob because it just was not enough space. The plants were way too vigorous. And I learned my lesson, but I think that's a classic newbie mistake. Classic newbie mistake is picking the wrong plant for the container.
Yeah. So the process that I like to suggest, particularly for people doing it the first time, is work out a wish list. What would you really love to have? Now, you would love to have fresh corn. Who wouldn't? And then from your wish list, you've got to compare it against reality. Will it actually work in containers? The problem with corn is it's wind pollinated. That's why farmers plant their corn patches so tight, because no matter which direction the wind comes from, the pollen, when the wind blows it, the pollen's going to land on another corn plant. If you've only got 4 plants, you don't have a chance in hell of getting them pollinated. That's why you only had 1.
Oh, I did so many things wrong, Maggie. I can't even... That's a whole nother podcast to go, what I did wrong with that garden last year.
We call that live and learn.
Live and learn, baby. Live and learn. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned your violas. I was surprised. So your book is like half history book and half how-to. So at the end of the book, if you've never made a container garden, you're going to know exactly how to put together a container garden and what plants to select. You've talked about the importance of growing edible food. And so I was expecting you to have your greens and your tomatoes and your all that kind of stuff. I was surprised that you had an edible flower portion of your book. And it seems like edible flowers are kind of a passion of yours. Why did you include edible flowers, which feel like a luxury, in a book about victory war gardens, which is about like growing what you need and, just growing the bare basics?
Well, because they add so much magic to your cooking. I mean, I love cooking and I love trying new things and working out and take a little bit of this and a little bit of that and see what you can do with it. But edible flowers, a lot of people have this idea that they're sort of fancy and hoity-toity and I don't want to bother with that, But first of all, who doesn't love flowers? Second of all, they are way easier than people think. Third of all, it's a great way to entice people who think they don't really want to know much about gardening. Because if you show them how easy it is to grow these pretty flowers, sometimes that's enough to tip them over into the good column. And one of the reasons that I love them, particularly the pansies and violas, is they grow in the springtime. Well, I don't know about you, but I think I do, living where you live. Boy, long about February, we're just desperate for something pretty, something colorful, something that smells nice. And here's a bonus. You can also add it to your dinner plans. You know, you can also eat it. And there's a lot of edible flowers. I focused on just four. They're easy to find and easy to grow. And all you really need is a couple of plants here and there in among the rest of what you've got growing in that container. It just adds a punch of color, a punch of sweetness, a punch of, I don't want to use the word elegance because it's not, I don't think of my dinner menu as elegant, but it's special. Take a regular tossed salad and throw a few nasturtium blossoms on top of it, and suddenly it becomes special. It's easy to do, and it's very rewarding.
Yeah, I joke with my husband. I grow viola in our planter, our hydroponic planter. And in the winter, when I grow my own greens from it, I like make him a saute of greens. And then I put the violas on top of it. And I say that I made him a garden for dinner. And it's just like so sweet and cute. And I agree. I think there should be flowers. Also, they're great pollinators for the fruits that you're growing. If you're growing tomatoes, you need pollinators.
Yes, thank you for saying that. And if, you know, everything that we can do to bring pollinators to your vegetable garden is very much a good thing to do. And you're also helping your neighbor's garden, for that matter.
Absolutely. I have two more questions I want to wrap up with you. Number one, if I'm a beginner gardener, never gardened before, I'm asking you how, and I have three containers, what do I grow in my three containers to ideally have a successful first garden experience?
Well, I would say you want maybe two tomatoes, and you already alluded to the difference between indeterminate and determinate. That's another conversation. But get somebody to tell you the difference. You're looking for determinate tomatoes. Those are the ones that just grow to a certain size and then don't grow any bigger. One, I would say two tomatoes, so you have a longer harvest period. All the herbs you think you'd like to include in your cooking, and maybe a couple more that you haven't ever tried before. Herbs are the easiest thing to grow in containers because they'll forgive you if you forget to water them. Some pansies in the springtime, some tuberous begonias in the summertime for the brightness and the joy of the colors. There are some new bush beans, if you like string beans, snap beans, whatever we call them, that are easy to do and fun. And a couple in particular that are just new this past couple of years that kind of cascade downward. So if you have hanging baskets, which is another way to maximize your space, they work well in there. And in particular, any kind of greens that your family likes. I'm talking about lettuces and spinach and kale and all of those things. But also, there's a whole wealth of Asian greens, like, you know, bok choy, and which now come in dwarf versions. And there's a thing called, for example, baby bok choy. So, and those are make the best use of your, remember, you got to start with the fact that you have limited space. They make the best use of limited space because we eat the whole plant. And they are healthy. They're just chock full of vitamins. They have wonderful, interesting tastes. And a lot of people are unfamiliar with them. So they get this wonderful surprise of growing Swiss chard with all of these brilliant colors. And some of the Asian greens that have interesting shapes and make a beautiful salad greens. So Asian greens, lettuces and other leafy greens, two tomatoes, all the herbs you like, and a couple that are brand new, and all the flowers you can fit in.
I love it.
And those will keep you going through three whole season, spring through summer through fall.
Love it. And then you'll be hooked, and then you'll be expanding your container collection next year. We're running up against time, but I'd love to close with, you have so many beautiful stories in your book about these heroic stories, really, about these victory gardens. What was the one that warmed your heart the most? Can you share it with us?
Well, it's really hard to choose one, but there's one in particular that is actually a sad story, but I'm going to tell it anyway because of what it means. In a lot of towns back then, nobody had any garden space, so somebody else who had extra would sort of invite a neighbor to share their space. And in this case, the family was using part of the space of their neighbor down the block, which meant that the two parents had to trade off with each other who went down to work in the garden and who stayed home with the kids. And the woman who was telling me this story went down with her dad one day, and they were in the area where they had planted potatoes, and it was time to harvest them. She was little. I think she was about 5 years old. And she looked over at her father as he was digging up the potatoes, and he had this horrible expression on his face that frightened her. And then he went a little farther down the row and did some other digging, and his whole demeanor just got more and more scary to her. It turned out there had been some kind of nasty pathogen that just wiped out the whole to make a potato crop that year. What he was seeing, it was planned to be a big part of their wintertime food supplies. So he was facing the possibility that the family was going to have trouble coming up with a steady supply of food to get them through the winter. What she was seeing was her father was scared about something. And it made me realize, seeing this from the child's perspective, we think we have it so easy. Here in those days, people were actually dependent on their garden to keep them being able to put food on the table. And if something happened, they were in big trouble. Now, the family got through the winter just fine because friends and neighbors helped them out, which is the other thing that came up all the time, is that people helped each other out. Even strangers helped each other out. And there are lots of... None of these stories are as dramatic and as tragic as that one, but seeing that possibility, what the effect of war on a regular American household, seeing that through a child's perspective was so touching to me. And then the other stories, there's a lot of stories, are just funny mistakes and funny things that happened. And they're all about doing the best you can. Times are hard. We're going to do the best we can. And that's the underlying theme through the whole thing. They are all doing the best they could.
As we are now, right? It is very interesting reading the book, coming out of the pandemic, coming out of a very tough time. It is very interesting to see how history repeats itself. And
yeah, the parallels are astonishing. Absolutely astonishing.
And the opportunity that we have as a community of gardeners to not only show up for ourselves, but to ideally show up for others and help our friends get gardens started and support the local community garden or go get involved and go figure out how you can have your largest impact just on the world. There's no war raging, but the world needs more kindness. The world needs more gardeners right now. Where can everyone find your book? I'd love for everyone to pick up a copy of this book, a very interesting book, very unique with this historical approach. What's it called and where is it sold?
The book is called A Container Victory Garden, meaning it's a victory garden that you grow in containers. And the subtitle is important. It's a beginner's guide to growing your own groceries. First of all, there's a website just about the book, and I'm going to say the name out loud. It's Container Victory Garden, all smushed together as if that was one long word, containervictorygarden.com, which has some of the information that I wasn't able to fit into the book because there's space limitations. And there's also all the places from which people can order books online. That's kind of covered there. And there's actually a lot of new information, that some stuff that wasn't in the book. As for the rest, as a longtime author, I love to encourage people to go to the actual bookstore in your hometown and support them. They really need our support badly. I understand the convenience of mail order. I do it myself sometimes when there's no other choice. But going to a real-life bookstore or your local library, where libraries need every one of us.
I'm obsessed with my local library. I love my library so much. I love it. Yeah, local library. We'll put all the links for all of that information. Do you have a website yourself, Maggie?
I do. It's just my name, maggiestuckey.com.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for all the books that you've written, but particularly for this. It was so nice to meet you today. And maybe we'll have you back on the podcast soon.
I would love to do that. It's been my absolute pleasure to visit with you this morning.
Thank you so much. Maggie for this amazing conversation. She's such a sweetheart. Oh my goodness. And such a prolific writer. The book of hers that we talked about today is called The Container Victory Garden. It's linked in the show notes. Grab yourself a copy. And like I said, it's part history book, part how-to. So if you buy it for the history, you're going to learn a lot about container gardening and you're going to hear the amazing stories we talked about. But also, it's an amazing how-to book. Like, you'll be able to learn how to container garden if you are interested. Also, if you're interested in gardening, I know we didn't like talk about the details of how to set up a container garden, but I have so many free episodes about gardening, container gardening, grow bag gardening, raised bed gardening. So just scroll down the feed of this podcast. We have like tons and tons of gardening episodes. So if you're a beginner gardener, I totally have your back. Just scroll down and give a listen. I have amazing guests. And also get the book. Thank you again to those new listeners who joined the Growing Joy Garden Society. If you're interested in joining us in the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet, you can go to jointhegardensociety.com. Thank you so much to our episode sponsors. The sponsors and the members of our garden society are literally what keeps this business afloat. It keeps me making weekly content for you. So support them when you can. I'm so picky about who I work with, and I absolutely love our sponsor partners. They're all such special people. All right, plant friends, I'm off to Florida. I'm off to go see the tropical foliage. I'm off to go see Monstera and snake plants as hedging, which makes me so jealous being in New York. And I'm off to go get my sister married. So until next time, my sweet plant friends, keep blooming and keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure that you're subscribed to the show so you don't miss an episode. We have incredible episodes lined up in 2023, and I don't want you to miss one topic. And while you're subscribing, would you mind clicking over to the review section and leaving us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so I thank you in advance for helping this podcast reach as many planty earbuds as possible across the globe. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got a ton of free options for you. First, there's the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's so fun. It takes literally 3 minutes to complete. You take the test, you get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you, inspired by your results. The link is in the show notes. Make sure to let me know what your personality is after you take the test. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, check out my website. We've got a bunch of free guides that you can download on topics like understanding natural light, which is actually a 3-day worksheet, and 9 ways to green up your office if you need to bring a little bit of planty joy into your work life. And finally, I want to invite you to join the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet, my online garden society. It's both a web platform and an iOS and Android app. It allows our listeners to get together in an algorithm and troll-free online space to swap plant care tips, humble brag about plant wins, and get support when you have plant fails. We have monthly live planty show and tells on Zoom, which are so fun, and even have a living library of planty book recommendations sourced from our community. You can go to jointhegardensociety.com to grab your membership. And for anything else, plant friend, I am here for you. Feel free to drop me a line, whether you have an idea for an episode, an event, or maybe you're even a planty business interested in sponsoring the show. And of course, following me on Instagram and TikTok for daily planty silliness, musings, and tips is always recommended. You can find me across socials at Growing Joy with Maria. Thank you again so much for listening. It is truly my honor and life's delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy, the podcast.
Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, plant friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up. So you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right house plants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.